It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this second day of January 2020. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you've got easy access, free and easy access, to the madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Pop on by. If you've never been there before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump in, and you will, of course, be greeted by the merry denizens thereof, including, at this point in time, early arrivers House of Roberts, Anatole, and Squeaky, and, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space this afternoon in Northern California to become Man Cave. Hi, I'm Bob. Sparky is also capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. So we're all set in there. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Every program here begins with gratitude because this is not a commercial operation. This is not a capitalist operation. This is a simple attempt to build and maintain a community of like-minded people of goodwill. And if you're in this conversation, you are among that number. Good evening to the folks tuning in on Facebook. Howdy to Queen Tracy and Robert and Dave and Timothy and Roger. Roger checking in from the rainy upper Amazon in Peru. That's pretty cool. Hi, Roger. But like I said, this program begins with gratitude, as all programs do at The Horn. Thanks going out to our subscribers for this evening. That would be Reggie and Rocco and Elizabeth. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. I can happily report that in order to finish off last night's Bruce's Memorial Challenge, Chris in Germany has put a challenge of her own on the table. If there are $40 out there, she will meet and double the 40. And that'll finish last night, and then we'll only have $200 to go to keep up with this evening. So thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Chris for making that challenge. And hopefully to some or all, someone among you who will meet the challenge and get us started on not being digging out of a hole here at the in the beginning days of a brand new year, but not a new decade. Just saying. Yeah. So again, thanks to all of you, Patreon, PayPal subscribers, a la carte contributors, for making all of this possible. Had a nice little New Year's dinner last night. It was the corned beef and cabbage went over well, as did the fresh cornbread and the Hoppin' John. And now I think I'm going to be eating New Year's leftovers for the first week. I always cook too much. I don't know how to cook too little. And of course, when you're on your own, cooking for one is damned near impossible. So, hence, leftovers. Lucky for me, I like the leftovers. Now, like I said, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you'd like to help out, run over to headon.live, click on the Contribute tab, and go from there. And thank you very kindly as well. Need to send out thanks. Some folks have trouble with the PayPal interface at headon.live because if you're using an ad blocker, it makes the widget go crazy. That's nothing we can do anything about. So apologies in advance, but RJ wanted to jump in last night and said he just mailed a check rather than fool with the madness of the interface. And if you would like to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, that's cool too. And the address is there at headon.live, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Okie doke. All right, so I guess that takes care of all the housekeeping. A reminder, and I'll mention this repeatedly because not everybody listens to every program, sadly. So I will be away from the mic for one broadcast week. That would be the 13th to the 17th, looking at the calendar now, the 13th to the 17th, inclusive of this month. That is not next week, but the week following, because that's the dress rehearsals and the performance dates for the theater piece that I'm working on. So just, you know, make a note of it. There will be, of course, tasty reruns running each evening, but it won't be fresh. And I admit that. I know that's, I know that's not optimum. But I don't, when you consider, for instance, that, most of your truly ginormous, big-time progressive broadcasters haven't been at work since before Christmas, and some won't be coming back until Monday. Let's see, Monday, the 6th. The amount of time that I'm not on the air in any given year is pretty slim. So I'll be back after the run of the play. The play closes the 19th with a Sunday matinee. And then it'll be time to head back up to the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cole Trump Jr. Stan. And I frankly am eager for that to happen. I miss, as the saying goes, I miss Agnes like the devil misses sin. Not to say that she is either the devil or a sinner. I fill both roles quite adequately, I think. But just mark your calendars so you won't be surprised. Hey, where's Bob? Oh, yeah, this is the week he was going to be gone. Okay? That would be very helpful. Where to begin? We've got lots of potential thorns in the side to get us started. Because in the new year, I guess the maggots are feeling all energized, and you know, they may have a reason to be, because the fundraising numbers indicate that Nitwit Nero, who is, of course, a past master of grifting and grafting, which means that he'll work the campaign fundraising racket pretty well. I mean, it's all he's done all his life is grift people out of money. Today, the maggot campaign said that just in the fourth quarter of 2019, in the fourth quarter, Tangerine Tiberius raised the terrifying sum of $46 million. Over the year, he brought in $143 million. And that is more than any of the Democrats running have raised. They further disclosed that they've got a cool $102.7 million in cold, cold cash just laying around doing nothing. Brad Parscale, who is a dweeby little maggot and is in charge of the campaign, said, the president's war chest and grassroots army make his reelection campaign an unstoppable juggernaut. Donald J. Trump. The J stands for juggernaut, I guess. I don't know. And we lost. Well, we didn't lose. We know where he is. Another Democratic candidate for the presidency bailed out today. Julian Castro. So the Democratic field of presidential candidates is getting whiter by the day, I guess. But Cory Booker's still in it. And the Hobbits are still represented by Michael Bloomberg. If he's the nominee, I'm going to eagerly vote for him. None of this nose-holding bullshit anymore. I understand the stakes, and I know why we've got to have some enthusiasm. And so I'm going to sit back and see what all those very, very, very special people in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada say about who's going to be our party's nominee. The Democratic nominee. I hope they'll choose wisely. But I have no vote. I have no vote in that. And if you're not in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, or South Carolina, neither do you. Male, female, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, doesn't matter. The only people who matter in America are the people in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, because that is just how fucked up our political system is. Charming, isn't it? Jesus. Meanwhile, as we look toward thorns in the side, as we look toward what's coming in our direction in 2020. If this is any indication, well, we're going to need each other. We're going to need this little community. We're going to need all the backup and support that we can muster, because we're going to be deluged in filth. It's going to be like some sort of awful shitstorm. What I mean by that? Well, there is a doctored piece of video making the rounds. And it's the sort of thing that if you've got two brain cells to rub together, odds are you're not fooled by this. But the number of people in this country who are fooled by these sorts of things is enough to, it's enough to endanger what is, what I laughingly refer to and laugh when it is referred to as our democracy. This kind of disinformation is enough to do us in. In this case, it's a dummied up piece of video that is being passed off as real of Grandpa Joe appearing to endorse white supremacy. And it makes him seem outright racist. A number of things combine to make this believable. among the minds of people who want their bias confirmed. One of which is the fact that Grandpa Joe goes around telling stories about Corn Pop and telling stories about how and describing the academic achievements of poor children as compared to, and these were his words, not mine, white children. And as Greg Sargent points out in the Washington Post today, it's particularly distressing, things like this video, this doctored up, dummied up video. It's 19 seconds worth of a 13-minute stemwinder that Grandpa Joe gave in New Hampshire. It was in response to a question from the audience about his agenda regarding sexual assault and domestic violence. And it's just 19 seconds. But in those 19 seconds, they managed to clip enough together to make Grandpa Joe seem like a downright Klansman, which he is not. But he also isn't particularly good when he gets into this kind of territory. He gets asked a question about domestic violence and sexual assault, and the next thing you know, he's talking about the English common law in 1300. Now, I mean, I'm actually working on a play right now that is set in 1183 among the family whose worst son, John, would eventually prove such a disastrous king that he would have that his barons, the earliest form of parliament, would cram the Magna Carta down his throat at the field called Runnymede. And they said, "See thou yonder oaken tree, O prince? Sign thou that there document, or hang from that there oaken tree." Well, not really, but close enough. And so there goes Grandpa Joe talking about the English common law in 1300 that made it legal for, Jesus Christ, men to beat their wives, and then described it as an inherited, quote, cultural problem, unquote. Now, this is, again, out of 13 minutes worth of monologuing. One of those 13-minute Grandpa Joe patented soliloquies. So, as Greg Sargent reports it, back around, as he gets up nearer the 13-minute mark, he says, folks, this is about changing the culture, our culture. It's not imported from some African nation or some Asian nation. Oh, Jesus. It's our English jurisprudential culture, our European culture. That says it's all right. And so what you wind up with in the 19-second video is our culture. It's not imported from some African nation or some Asian nation. It's our English jurisprudential culture, our European culture. And so there you go. And as the saying goes, a lie can get around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. And what Greg Sargent points out is this is the tsunami that is headed for us in the coming year. And man, we had better be sharp. We'd better be paying attention, and we'd better be committed enough to jump out there and call this wicked shit out when it comes out. And in particular, be prepared to do our homework so that, unlike some of the bloggers who have tens of thousands of followers on Twitter, who in particular shared that video, that we don't do Team Maggots work for it. Yeah, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. And that's true. Randy in PA points out, you know, if we had instant runoff voting, there never would have been any nose holding. Everybody would be voting for someone instead of voting against someone. But as Randy points out, it's about 30 years too late for that. Although ranked choice voting, as it's also known, is growing in popularity. Now, the only problem, what it means, though, if you look, for instance, at California's jungle primaries, which are not the same thing, but comparable, is that if you've got a state that's got one party extremely dominant, it just means you're always going to be, the choices you rank are going to be hard to stomach. Can you imagine ranked choice voting in a place like this, in a place like Talabama, where you can have an insane Republican or a really, no kidding, honest to God, batshit crazy Republican, and you got to rank through that filth, where you can have, let's take Alabama's Republican Senate race to become the nominee to square off against Doug Jones. You could have Roy Tolamore, or you could have the slightly more telegenic but equally as nutty attorney general of this state. Or you could have the right-wing former head football coach of the Auburn Tigers, Tommy Tuberville. Yeah. Or maybe if he decides to get into the race, you could have Mo Brooks, Les Brames. And way down there, you know, there's Doug Jones. And hopefully nobody challenging him in the primary. Ugh. So, you know, everything has its flaws. But we've got a world of shit on the way. As Greg Sargent writes, distressingly, some reporters and people with large Twitter followings tweeted out the video before others drew their attention to the full context, causing them to backtrack. Sargent further notes, have we really learned nothing in the past few years? One hopes this episode will be taken as a cautionary tale of what's coming. Yeah. And, I know. Randy says I wasn't talking about a jungle primary. I get that. It was only for purposes of comparison. I had a note from Lady B to get things started for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Sent you this last week, but your show didn't air that day. Updated it with more comments as to why Joe Biden will probably end up our best bet. Oh, and by the way, for all of my jokes about the far frozen north, I just had a note from Ron in the aforementioned far frozen north, which ain't. Ron pointing out, it's 36 degrees in Ottawa in January, and it won't even get below freezing tonight. What the fuck is going on? This ain't the eastern Ontario winter that I've known for the past 30 years. In this part of the world. Climate change, anyone? climate emergency, Ron, climate crisis, because it ain't getting as cold in Ottawa as it ought to be. And down here where I am right now, it's just monsoon season. And so it started raining last night. It has rained all day. It's going to keep raining. And here as we move toward as we move toward sunset, the sun will set in about another 25 minutes here. It's pouring and 53 degrees, and it's going to keep pouring all night long and through most of tomorrow. And the overnight low is the same temperature as what the temperature is right now, and we will climb into the 60s tomorrow. Yeah. Imagine. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of sympathy for us, say, in a place like Australia. Because I read several deeply disturbing articles today about what is happening there. And we'll get to them in a moment. But I want to go back to the note that Lady B sent. She said, I was listening to Ali Velshi talk about the economy, absolutely gobsmacked by the realization that there are some people out there who don't know or even care that there are people out here who struggle to make ends meet every single day. I mean, they're aware we exist, but for some, it's like an only child trying to appreciate what it's like to have to share a bed with two siblings. There are people who cannot imagine what it would be like to not be able to afford toilet paper or gas in their cars from week to week. To nobody in particular, there are plenty of poor people who are smarter than you. There are plenty of very good, kind-hearted, helpful, wonderful people who are poor. I know this is hard to believe because we equate money with smarts, and that we do, and it's a big mistake. It's part of the Christian ideology, and more particularly, it's part of the Calvinist ideology. If you're wealthy, it's because God likes you. If you're poor, God doesn't. At least it's got the benefit of being simple to comprehend. Oh, you're poor? Sucks to be you. God doesn't like you. But for reasons we will never know or even understand, Lady B continues, some smart, kind-hearted Americans are poor. And we, the richest, most technologically advanced country in the world. Should being a human being who wants to at least afford the necessities of life always be linked with how much money you're capable of making? Why? And if you feel you shouldn't be responsible for them all, let me ask you this. Who the fuck are you to elevate yourself above the Lord thy God? Because Lady B, inevitably, the folks who believe that way are also some of, quite, almost always some of your finest Christians. Anyway, a sobering thought had occurred to me last week. I think maybe Joe Biden would be our best bet for president. Hear me out on this, because my God, I don't want to straddle the middle, the white male is the answer to all our problems solution either. But not enough whites have been persuaded. Not enough have truly suffered. They can't picture anyone putting out this dumpster fire other than a trusty, kindly old white male. I'm an older black woman, and I may end up voting for Joe in the general if he becomes the nominee. I get that I'm fitting the current media stereotype, but guys, this country will go further right before we ever go full liberal. And if we older blacks seem suspicious or even reluctant to take a chance on Bernie, Warren, or Buttigieg, it's because we can read a room full of white people like nobody's business. We blacks tend to vote Democratic no matter what, but some white Dems have a tendency to vote party line when shit's going great and then skip around when it isn't. Yeah. Me, I was always taught that straight ticket voting was your best bet. Lady B says, how many of you voted for George Bush and then after he tanked the economy switched to Obama? How many white people cast their very first vote for fucking Ronald Reagan, for Christ's sakes? He did untold harm to millions of minority families and treated gays like biblical lepers, but white folks made a shitload of money under him, so I can't blame some of y'all for looking out for yourself and your kids, but thanks for priming the pump for extreme right-wing conservatism. As for Pete Buttigieg is concerned, I don't know him and I don't care. Wolf in sheep's clothing anyway. He may be gay, but that's as liberal as he gets. The man is as much a Democrat as Mark Zuckerberg is. Socially liberal, but when it comes to money, he's blinkered. He grew up rich and only came out after he got out of the military. Live your beautiful life, Pete. But you ain't getting my vote. I think this fall we will be mobilized enough to vote Trump out, but not enough to go as far left as we may need to. There are too many conservatives, too many folks comfortable with their incomes, and too many white folks who are not ready for the full, absolute, worldwide cultural and environmental changes that await us. But whatever. Vote Mickey Mouse in the primary if you like, but if Biden is the nominee in the general, do us all a favor and at least pretend to give a shit about the children. We know you can afford to hole yourself up in your luxuriously appointed underground nuclear bunker if it all goes to shit. That must be your plan all along if you think voting in the general for anyone but the Democratic presidential nominee will push Trump out of office. God, I hate to say it, but Biden could bring sanity back to the White House, or at least fake it pretty well. He certainly will be trusted by our allies, and maybe that's what we need. I desperately want radical change too, but I don't know if we can risk it this time. We could lose this country as we know it. I think we're in a dangerous place right now. We need truth. We need believability. We need people who are trustworthy. Biden has bona fides. God, he's a smiling, disingenuous used car salesman who, although he may have a heart of gold, it wouldn't stop him from selling that widowed pensioner that 2001 Dodge Neon with a rusty undercarriage. And he'll win Salesman of the Year because even though he wasn't able to clear the entire lot of all the junkers, he'll move enough to keep you in business. In other words, he's not what we want, but unfortunately, he is who we fucking may need. Convince me, Horn family, that I'm completely wrong. I welcome the chance to dismiss any pessimism. In the meantime, Bob, Happy New Year. Shorter of breath and one day closer to death are we all. We get our chance to try with the twinkling of an eye, with 80 years, with luck, or even less. Lady, I could quote Pink Floyd lyrics all day. B. Well, there is enough in there to keep the conversation going for the entirety of the program. Do what you want to do in the primary, but for the love of Christ, or whatever you find sacred or holy or meaningful, do the right thing in the general. And I can say that it's worrisome. I just happened to click on a Bernie or bust thread, and there were hundreds of people in it saying, come November, if Bernie's not the nominee, I'm writing in Bernie. In the general. That way lies the Trump second term. It may be, considering the fact that we seem unable to protect our electoral process, we may be pre-fucked for Russian convenience. I wish it was otherwise. It's not. Oh, thanks, Mark. And Mark in Florida, watching on Facebook. Glad you like the shirt. It's one of my favorites, too. Randy says, I'm in contact with a wealthy professional who thinks that the black community will turn its back on the Democratic Party because they're taken for granted by the Dems, which is probably true, but I think that I'm not wrong that when confronted by a choice between the bad and the horrible, most people will choose the bad. Right. It's the opposite way to describe that is the phenomenon of letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. And if you think that there's any proximity between the awfulness of Trump And whatever it is you think, say, for instance, of Joe Biden, then, you know, that's a flaw in your thought process, and it's not on the rest of us. And we can only hope that you will not get mired in your pride. James in Illinois, subject line, someone correct me. I could be wrong, but I think the way it works is that there is only one primary, not Republicans and Democrats. Then the general election features the top two. You'd likely get two Democrats facing off in a lot of congressional districts and two Republicans in the Deep South. It's conceivable in that system for an incumbent to be eliminated because he, she didn't make the rank. For Lady B, not all older black folks are seers. I had one tell me that he had me pegged for a Republican. I told him I was a born Democrat, but if I was offered a second choice, it'd be socialist. Just saying, says James. But like I said, because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and by the way, remember, please, we're into the second half hour of the program. We have a kind matching offer of $40 to finish off Bruce's Memorial Challenge from last night. That's courtesy of Chris in Germany. We can get $40 in, that will knock out last night, and then we can work on this evening's $200. Okay? Thanks in advance. Now, the issue of, and I have mentioned it, but I don't think I have fully comprehended what's going on in Australia, but I got some help today by virtue of a thread I found over on Twitter. This stuff will, I mean, these facts will give you the, if you're like me, they'll give you the creeps. They'll give you the horrors, the terrors. An individual in Germany who apparently knows his Australia was able to contextualize what's happening there. More, he writes, Bodie Ashton, more of Australia is presently burning than exists in the entirety of the little nation of Belgium. The smoke is so bad that they are having breathing problems 2,000 miles away in New Zealand. And he also references what ecologists from the University of Sydney have announced. In the course of this ongoing catastrophe, which shows no sign of either let up or improvement, Australia has lost something on the order of 500 million wild animals of all type. Koalas, kangaroos, wallabies, possums, echidnas. Tens of thousands of people have had to flee their homes. Standing, I saw the video that Robert sent us the other day, standing on the seashore, having been driven toward the water by the oncoming fires. The ecologists say that their estimates are probably lowball because, well, they're never going to be able to count all the remains after the fires because of the consumptive nature of these vast and ongoing blazes. Those 480 million animals, whether they be birds or reptiles or mammals, whatever, that number's probably going up. And that number was not generated over the course of January to December 2019. That 480 million number is since September. September, October, November, December. 4 months. That's 120 million animals per month. It begins to sort of come into focus, doesn't it? You know, we were talking the other night about the movie On the Beach. And it posits a world It posits a world in which there's been a nuclear disaster in the Northern Hemisphere, and somehow or another, the Southern Hemisphere manages to survive. Well, I guess it just didn't take into account the idea that we might screw up the world badly enough that Australia would burn down. At least 8 people are dead out of the fires. And the statistics just grow more harrowing fact by fact by fact. 1/7 of the entire country, of the entire state of Victoria is burning. And the fire front in the state of New South Wales, get this, just let this sink in. The fire front in New South Wales is so long that if you stretched it out in a straight line, it would stretch from Sydney, Australia to Afghanistan. And just for purposes of accuracy, Afghanistan is not exactly right around the corner from Australia. It's not even right around the corner from the westernmost city in Australia, Perth. But the line of fire would stretch from Sydney to Afghanistan. This is truly where the so-called Liberal government, which means conservative in Australia, where the Liberal government is concerned, they don't even want to talk about it. They are, you could pass out violins to the entire conservative majority and they would gladly play turkey in the burning straw rather than talk about climate crisis, climate emergency, the Liberal Party's sickening attachment to coal, and they're treating it the same way that our Republicans treat gun disasters. That is to say, if anybody tries to bring up the fact that Australia is on fire, your average Liberal Party politician will say, now we can't talk about that right now. It's too raw. It's too soon. There's too many people grieving. We can't be having people play the blame game for why our country's on fire. And that's what happens every time some school or movie theater gets shot up. We can't talk about that. We just need to send thoughts and prayers. And then there's the firefighters. I mean, one of the questions that dogged Kamala Harris before she got out of the campaign, and she never addressed it either directly or sufficiently, was her office, when she was the Attorney General of California, her office's official position that they did not want nonviolent criminals released from prison in advance of their stated release date, because it would do the state of California out of a bunch of free labor. Free labor that, in fact, was quite often used in fighting fires. And in Australia, they're fighting the fires with volunteer firefighters. You let that one sink in for a minute, too. And they volunteer to fight fires, in some instances, because they're unemployed. And as unemployed people, they get unemployment compensation. But in Australia, you have to jump through a number of flaming barbed wire hoops in order to keep your unemployment compensation coming. And one of those flaming barbed wire hoops is that you have to demonstrate to the government that you have been looking for work, that you've been searching for a job by putting in X number of required applications per week. But the problem here is that because they're out fighting the bushfires, the volunteer firefighters can't apply for the jobs, so therefore they get booted off of their unemployment compensation because they're actually working to try to save lives. How's that for Orwellian? This is so wrong on so many levels. And yet, if I recall what Robert told us not too long back, you know, Australians went to the polls and reaffirmed these stupid conservative bastards in office. Sure, go ahead. Hit us again. I can put some stank on it. Do you remember when Dim Leader pretended to play an upside-down guitar at a birthday party while bodies were floating in the fetid, polluted, stinking waters in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina? You remember back when we had the photographs of white people carrying stolen stuff away, and they were described as foraging, and people of color doing the same thing were described as looting? Long memory I've got. Well, it's a little like that. What I mean is, it's a little like that when you consider that George Bush was at a birthday party playing an upside-down guitar. Because in the middle of having his country on fire at unprecedented levels, Scott Morrison, what's his name, as Robert in Australia refers to him, decided that would be a fine time to go on a Hawaiian vacation. And then when he got caught in Hawaii, his hacks and flacks said, "Now we're trying to get him back, but there are no flights from Honolulu to Sydney. They've all disappeared." Which, of course, they hadn't. Given enough time, I think they would have pled that Scott Morrison was hawking the Appalachian Trail. Guys right over Mauna Loa. Oh, it cut me a break. Ron and Raleigh was saying just a couple of days ago that we haven't heard from old cousin Crocodile Kincaid in a while, so I thought I'd air him out a little bit. So there are no in the entire nation, there are, like, you know, no open fire, no burn, no barbed mash shrimp on the babby. And yes, they did still go forward with their stupid fireworks displays for New Year's. And in fact, in Adelaide, the fireworks caused a small brush fire. Millions and millions of dollars were spent on the fireworks while the firefighters went begging. The brush fire in Adelaide was mercifully small and dealt with. And the firefighting, the fire season has become so long in Australia now that what they used to do to mitigate them, namely backfires, there's not enough time to do them now. And the and just by comparison, remember when we were having a hissy because the Amazon was on fire? The Australian brush fires, bush fires are orders of magnitude larger than that. They're also orders of magnitude bigger than the California fires of recent memory. And no one with a function with a couple of brain cells to rub together will tell you that this fire catastrophe will be passed. It's going to take months before Australia stops burning. Months. There are parts of Sydney right now where to simply go outside and live like a human being on planet Earth is the functional equivalent of smoking a pack of cigarettes. Now, in Australia, you know what cigarette packs are like here? Everybody knows what the Marlboro pack looks like. Everybody knows what... maybe the Camel Pack or Lucky Strikes. Well, you can't have packs like that in Australia anymore. Packs of cigarettes are hugely expensive, and they come in a white package with black ink and things like skull and crossbones on the pack, trying to get it through the Australian mind that they should probably quit smoking, and the government's going to punish them until they do. Walking around Sydney now is like smoking a pack of cigarettes from the smoke. Public buildings are closing here and there, hither and thither, both in Sydney and in Canberra. See, I'll talk to Kazan Crocodile Kincaid. He's the one that taught me how to say Canberra, not Canberra. You know, Canberra, cousin of Yogi Berra. Nah, Canberra. They had to close the buildings because the ventilation systems are getting filled with smoke. And the smoke filling the ventilation systems in turn sets off the fire mitigation systems. And then everybody just gets rained on inside the building when the sprinklers come on. And here's another one to sort of ponder. The average temperature across all of Australia, which is the size roughly of the United States portion of the North American continent, the contiguous 48, that's about the size of Australia. Now, imagine a United States where the average temperature in Boston, the average temperature in Seattle, the average temperature in Los Angeles, the average temperature in Chicago, the average temperature in Atlanta, the average temperature in D.C., the average temperature in Miami, New Orleans, Nashville, Dallas, Phoenix, San Francisco, Portland, St. Louis is 105 degrees Fahrenheit. That is Australia right now.
I mean, goddamn, Bob, it's summer.
Well, summer will be here soon enough, and it'll be blazing hot in places like where I am now. But it won't be 105. If it got to 105 degrees in Boston and New York, people would freak the out. 105 in San Francisco would have people leaping in the bay. The average temperature across Australia right now is 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Whether we're talking about the banana benders in Queensland or the Sydney and New South Wales and Melbourne, Perth, the interior, it's all 105 degrees. Can you imagine an average temperature of 105 degrees in Denver in the summer? I mean, I saw Timothy in the Facebook chat says it's going to be about 60 degrees in Denver on Saturday. And we may get a chance to find out what those 105 degree summers are like. But here's a hint: shit catches fire. Bodie Ashton also pointed out that firefront. Imagine, because as Americans, we don't think about anywhere else. We think about Merca. Imagine a fire, and it burns unbrokenly from New York to Los Angeles. And then it doubles back and burns unbrokenly from Los Angeles to New York. And then it keeps burning unbrokenly and heads from New York to Los Angeles again and only stops in Talibandiana. That's the fire line in Australia. And I don't have enough information to understand why the Australian people are putting up with this, but they are. You know, the old myth from classical antiquity that Nero fiddled while Rome burned is exactly that. It's a myth. First of all, there were no fiddles. At most, he was vilified by subsequent generations for plucking on a lyre. Wait, do I have one of those? No, that's the laughter. That's the sad trombone. That's the applause. One of these days, I'm gonna mark these things. Nah, not that one either. Well, we're down to, I think, one or two. Could it be? Oh, for pity's sake. That thing goes on forever. Well, doggone it, I had a harp. That's all I wanted was my harp sound effect. Ron, in the sort of squishy and not fully frozen north, says, I would note that several hundred million global citizens are currently suffering through the effects of real climate change. We collectively ignore them and refuse to acknowledge that these unfortunate canaries have any connection to us. I'm starting to think we may deserve our fate, but I'm okay. I'm a boomer. Okay, Bama. Ron continues, the scenes of Australians gathered on the beaches as the fires advanced toward them reminded me of Dunkirk. That may not mean much in the Freedom States, but it's a powerful memory for folks from the old British Commonwealth, indeed. I mean, when your back is to the sea, there's not a hell of a lot of place to go. And thanks, Ron, for jumping in. Thanks to Ron and Charlene for jumping in on Chris's. And by the way, it was a fuck Trump challenge. So fuck Trump. That was Chris's fuck Trump challenge, and it's been met. And thank you to Irwin for jumping in on it. That means that we've finished yesterday, and we've got a $50 start on this evening, and only $150 more to go. So that's tremendous. If we can raise $150, then that leaves us with a non-terrifying ordinary day evening's fundraising for tomorrow. I do love my bougie water bottle. But think about the plastic bottles that I'm not putting in the ocean. Australia will burn for months. In other words, says Brother Deacon Asa, this is Australia's deep jungle horizon. I have a Banjo Patterson, Australia's version of the Alexander Hamilton $10 bill, that says the good people of Australia will put these same monsters back in charge the next election around. Mandatory voting doesn't necessarily mean immunity from too stupid. And, you know, and I'll have to rely on our friends in Australia like Robert or the Angry Architect, John Fox. Labor Party, who are the Liberals, remember the Liberals are the Conservatives, it all gets terribly confusing. The water in the toilets doesn't go the right way, and it drives me mad. But they're not as odious as the media portrayed Jeremy Corbyn and his party in the UK to be, but they just keep losing and losing and losing. And Australia, the barrier reef's gone. Might as well be. Country's burning down. And they are coal goobers sufficient to make Joe Manchin and Jim Justice blush. And for the life of me, I don't understand. Do you just say, fuck it. Don, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Don. Ash from fires melts glaciers. Yep, thanks to the bushfires in Australia, those magnificent glaciers that were so prominently featured, say, in The Lord of the Rings trilogy. New Zealand glaciers turn brown and could melt faster because of Australia's bushfires. And in the midst of all this, you've got people who are saying, oh, no, I won't vote for this one or I won't vote for that one. So, you know, we'll just let Trump stay president for another 4 years. And who knows what we'll be like by then. CNN reporting smoke and ash drifting from the Australian bushfires have caused New Zealand's glaciers to turn caramel brown, with one expert fearing this could increase the risk of them melting faster this year. You know, when they're in West Virginia, because hillbillies, when it snows, and then in order to clear the roads for years, I don't know if they still do, they would put coal ash, cinders, on the road to help melt the ice. Guess what? It does. A jet stream transporting large amounts of smoke and ash this week from the blazes in Victoria and New South Wales deposited them along the way in New Zealand's South Island as they traveled east, according to CNN meteorologist Michael Guy. The yellow haze had discolored the snowy mountain peaks and glaciers in the Southern Alps. One woman took pictures of the Southern Alps on New Year's Day. She said, we took a flight up over Fox and Franz Josef glaciers and landed on a flat surface not too far from the glaciers, not on a glacier per se. The pilot said he'd been up the day before and the snow was white. She went on to say, I'm an Aussie living in Wellington, New Zealand on a South Island road trip with my sister, who is in from rural New South Wales. So we've been following the news closely and feeling pretty devastated. Helen Clark, who is a former Prime Minister of New Zealand and not a climate emergency denier, she didn't mince any words. She said, how one country's tragedy has spillover effects. Australian bushfires have created haze in New Zealand with particular impact on the south of the South Island yesterday and now spreading more widely. Impact of ash on glaciers is likely to accelerate melting. Damn. Thanks for letting us know about that, Don. Don't worry, though. Jesus will take care of it. Crikey, says Ron and Raleigh. G'day, Bob. Was some bloke complaining about a visit from old Crocodile Kincaid, so volunteers are fighting the bushfires and are being screwed out of benefits because they're working for their fellow citizens. Conservatives are using the same hymnal. Comb over Caligula is planning to cut SSDI and SSI. We talked about that the other night. And the recipients have to reapply every 6 months. Do they sit around and make this shit up to torment the poor and disabled? Yeah. The maggots will send that orange skid mark more money so he can fuck with them some more. God almighty. Free labor, James in Illinois says, right after my wife was elected to the school board in our Northern California town, the new prison that I had worked on was offering up a lot of that free labor. To be clear, only what is referred to as level one inmates, the least violent, least troublesome, were considered for such positions, and the labor isn't exactly free. They're paid a pittance, but the free is a double-edged sword. There's a law on the books, I can't quote it, but it states that no inmate is to perform labor that would put a free person out of a job. One day we found out that the roof on our children's school was being replaced. There were roofers doing the tear-off, but the grunt work on the ground was being performed by a huge number of prisoners. I've never seen a construction job with so many hands. No one could afford it. But these guys weren't exactly setting the woods on fire, if you know what I mean. So we took a little jaunt over there, and I walked up to the officer who was accompanying the crew of inmates. I asked him by what authority these men were there, as my position was that of that every one of them was putting a laborer out of a job. He warned me that I really shouldn't be there. These are prison inmates. They're convicted criminals. I laughed and told him that, in my opinion, a lot of them wouldn't be there if they had fucking jobs. Now they do, thanks to the state of California. The inmates laughed, too. I introduced them to my wife, the school board member representing the district in which this school was located. We have every right to be here. I'm not sure about you. Fucking newly minted correctional officers. Well, at least those newly minted correctional officers haven't been seen giving the Hitler salute in their graduation pictures like we did in West Virginia. Take your victories where you can find them, James. And, of course, the same thing obtained with Michael Bloomberg. Yeah, his fundraising emails were being, they were outsourced to prison labor. Where they were paid, it said they were paid up to $28 a day or something. Only thing is, the prison system got the $28. The female prisoners might have gotten $2 a day. And the Bloomberg campaign said, yeah, that's about how, that's pretty much the skinny of it. Yeah, you're right. Don up in Prince George, British Columbia, sending along the glacier story. I mean, it's mind bending, isn't it? Oh, by the way, though, there was some good news out of British Columbia. That gang of unrepentant commies has just made the made access to health care even more accessy. Brother Deacon Asa was telling me about that a couple of days ago. Yeah, imagine the horror. Because, let's see, where is it? At any rate, it's even less of a pain in the ass to go to the doctor in British Columbia now. How about that? And as far as Australia is concerned, that smoke. The distance is 1,212 miles. That's slightly less than London to St. Petersburg or Miami to Boston. Imagine fires burning in Boston and turning the sand tan in Miami Beach. You get a pretty good idea for how bad off it is. And then we go back to where it began. The species die off. One colony of koalas, according to the people who monitor such things, 30% of one koala colony on the northeast coast of Australia is gone. Somewhere between 4,500 and 8,400 koalas burned alive in these fires. And today, earlier, the New South Wales state government got around to declaring a state of emergency. It takes effect, I guess, now, because it's Friday there. And the fires are expected to get worse over the weekend. Rob Rogers is Deputy Commissioner of the New South Wales Rural Fire Service. He said, "We've got a lot of fire in the landscape that we will not contain. We need to make sure that people are not in the path of these fires." And there's actually an open question as to whether a climate emergency denier should remain in office past January 20th, 2021. Lady B says, "I feel for those folks. No one deserves to have to live like that. They're human beings. And the animals, Jesus, I'm a pet lover. Dogs are damn near humans in my family. I can't imagine the suffering of any animals. How can Australia fix this? I mean, after the fires, what can they do to prevent this? What caused the fires, and how can they, or better yet, we, help fix this now? Will the country still be livable in 100 years? Well, we have to, we don't have to even try, do we? We can just sit back and mutter that the condemned ate heartily. And that's where we'll be. But if we do try, the effort has to have some value. And, you know, they've actually put a price. Scientists put a price on what it would cost to buy us another 10 years before the shit really hits the fan. Maybe push it from 2029 to 2039. And do you know what? It's a paltry half a trillion bucks. It's a paltry $500 billion. Meanwhile, the richest people in the world got richer by 25% last year alone. Man, there's a whole lot to sink in and settle in this process. We don't have a single unsolvable problem in this country or this world. We do not have hungry people in this world because there isn't enough food to eat. We have hungry people in this world because we have rich people in this world who are so worried about their own acquisition of wealth that they are willing to let other people starve. We do not have hungry people in this world because there's something wrong with them. We have hungry people in this world. We have poverty in this world because we choose to have poverty in this world. Or more particularly, the 0.1% choose for others to live in poverty in this world. Lady B says, I read a great story a couple of years ago about Earth a few thousand years in the future. The environment had gone to shit. Almost everything was extinct. If you took an African safari, you'd be lucky to see a honey badger. Elephants and giraffes didn't exist except in history books. Can't remember the name. It was a science fiction story, but it was sobering. Is this our fate? Will Australia become like those abandoned atomic bomb atolls? When will we care enough to vote for folks who will not only fix but find a way to fund this? You don't have to look hard for a way to fund this. You just have to look hard for people willing to implement the policy changes that are necessary in order to fund it and to solve it. It can be done. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding we don't have a single unsolvable problem in this world, how about human greed? That seems unsolvable. No, I think we could teach our way out of that one, too. There might be some object moral lessons involved. But if you drag out a gajillionaire every once in a while, let's just say that if they won't learn, they can at least curtail their behavior by seeing real world consequences of it. Answering my question, Robert in Australia says, "Why do people vote for the Liberal Party? Guess who owns most of the media outlets? Son of a gun." Rupert Murdoch said, I don't want the little people to have an NBN. I'll lose money on my cable channels. National Broadcasting Network. So the liberals fucked. They threw away a once a century opportunity to build a future-proof NBN. I think that's National Broadband. All across the country in exchange for a few weeks of good press from Rupert. People have been convinced by the media that only the Liberal Party can get the economy moving. It's a lie, but some, says Robert, I would suggest too many people believe it. And here in Australia, it's generally a small percentage of swing voters who decide the federal government. Oh, well, same thing here. I mean, we're going through the primary theater of the absurd. But after the nominees in place and we know what the head-to-head matchup's going to be, it will, as usual, be the unicorn, the national multimillionaire for-profit media unicorn search for the uncommitted independent voter. I can't imagine who that person must be that these networks are out there convinced exist. Who's just sitting there going, I don't know. That Donald Trump, I mean, he's a sexual deviant and a sicko and a con man, and he ain't never been faithful to a single woman he married, and he's got 5 children by 3 baby mamas, and he's got a filthy mouth, and he's dumber than hell. But I don't know if I want to vote for his opponent. That may just be the kind of president we need. Whew. Terrifying, isn't it? Robert continues and says, John Howard said 1,000 times, interest rates will always be lower under a liberal government. This was done to appeal to young couples trying to buy their first house. For a while, they even had a $14,000 grant to first-time homeowners. All this at a time when interests were low all around the world, even under the Labour governments in the UK. Interest rates in Australia have nothing to do with who's in government. We've been riding the dragon for decades. We dig it up and send it to China. And once that stops, Australia is screwed financially. Imagine that. Massive strip mining in a country that's on fire. Phew. I guess it's a wonder that some of those coal terminals haven't caught fire. Or maybe they have, Robert, or somebody will tell us, I'm sure. Told you there were a lot of thorns in this thorn in the side Thursday. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who's gotten us down to only $150 to go to finish finish fundraising for this evening and help us stay even through the first 2 days of 2020. Thank you very much. You know, even though it's arbitrary, one of the nice things about the new year is I get to start my search for my annual search for the most beautiful day of the year thus far. And usually that most beautiful day will happen in May or June, especially up in the hills and hollers. But it's always so nice to look at each beautiful day as it comes along and say, well, this one's a contender. And we're not that far away from it. Even closer down here. The problem is, now that Alabama has tornado season in December, kind of makes you wonder what March, traditionally the opening of tornado season, is going to look like. Of course, I'll be gone from here by then. And then by the time like July and August get here, it will be positively oppressive. Rusty, the sci-fi film Elysium, the rich live on an orbiting man-made planet. Yikes. Yeah, while the proles duke it out down on the surface, I guess. Dwayne says, hey, Bob Kincaid. Hey, Dwayne. Thanks for popping by. And a while back when I was talking about the people who said they're going to write in this candidate or that candidate in the general election no matter what, Steve in New York, subject line, Bernie or bust, a.k.a. I'll take my health care and go home. We've discussed this many times, but I will broach it again. In life, nobody ever gets everything they want. Life, as much as I admittedly hate it at times, is about compromising. It's about doing the best to get as much of what you want as possible and then taking that. Why is it that some people think that politics is the big exception to the rule? Because we act in a sort of sense of irrational self-interest. It's kind of like the people who didn't bother to do their homework on that doctored Biden video because, well, they weren't interested in whether it was real or legitimate or not. They were interested in having their biases confirmed. Because that's always fun. In the meantime, again, because we're just grabbing handfuls of briars this evening, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, you recall that toward the end of the year, Time Magazine named Greta Thunberg its Person of the Year, sending Nitwit Nero right up a tree. Well, it rankled in other places as well. Remember Kevin Swanson? He's the Colorado preacher who thinks that little girls who watch Frozen are all going to turn out to be lesbians because these freaks are constantly thinking about how other people have sex. And Kevin Swanson, among other things, also wants to stone people to death for how they have sex. But he took a break from hating on gay people and fundraising on their backs. To attack Greta Thunberg, get the hockey puck, get the duct tape.
Here is a picture of the collapse of the West. I think more than anything I've ever seen, this the most iconic picture of the death of the West ever, and that is that Time Magazine has appointed Time's Person of the Year to Greta Thunberg.
Greta Thunberg?
Yeah, some 15, 16 years of age. Yeah. The prophetess of the New Age, Greta Thunberg. She is that teenager from Stockholm, Sweden, and she is the prophetess that speaks at the United Nations, no less. This is what she said. This is a piece of what she said to the United Nations, speaking to the world, instructing the leaders of the entire world concerning her wisdom and her prophetic announcements and pronouncements for the day.
Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
All right, so there it is.
What did she say? Mass extinctions and die-offs? You mean like 500 million dead animals in Australia? Something like that? Oh, no, but Kevin Swanson, of course. Kevin Swanson, no. She's a prophetess. Did you notice that? No, Steve Miller Band fans, not a pompetus, but a prophetess. She's not prophesying. Prophesying is magic. The young woman has been taught science, and she is discussing the science that she has learned.
That's the prophetess speaking 14, 15 years of age, to the entire world. We're going to get to the Isaiah 3 passage in just a moment. I know that most of our listening audience is going to be, that's Isaiah 3. But this is the iconic picture of what is happening at the death of the West. My friends, this is it. This is the unraveling of the Western world. This is what it looks like. Now, sadly, you know, she's just a young girl. She's 14, 15 years of age, very disturbed.
Yeah, she's
psychologically
16,
disturbed.
16 now, I think.
16 now. Yeah. She's been psychologically disturbed, diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, selective mutism. The Bible speaks of mutism, selective mutism, in terms of that mute demonic.
Here it goes. Yeah, we got there. I couldn't stop it in time. Yeah, a young woman who would like for her generation to have a fighting chance to live on this planet. Well, because she wants that, she's got the demons. Yep, she got a bad case of demon. Mm-hmm. Demons. What a disgusting thing Kevin Swanson is. And by the way, in case you were wondering, when these white wingers and these maggots say the demise of Western civilization, well, Western civilization is doing a whole lot of work there. Western civilization, of course, means white people. So you don't. It's not much of a stretch to get from what Kevin Swanson is saying here to the Nazis who marched in Charlottesville shrieking, "Jews will not replace us." The death of the West. Hey, Kevin, you fucking idiot. The West, if it is dying with the rest of the planet from the very things that you think are just peachy keen. Like burning fossil fuels and hydrocarbons and just expecting that Jeebus will look down and wave his magic wand and the planet will somehow continue to sustain human life. Jesus. Over on Twitter, Hey Sailor says, it's stunning that Australia had to ask us for firefighting aircraft that we didn't offer at first. Their prime minister is a winger like Trump, so maybe the U.S. will help after they do Trump a favor and investigate Joe Biden. Ouch.
We'll send you some of our tanker planes. But first, we'd like you to do us a favor.
God damn. Well, Kevin Swanson wasn't done.
Spirit that affected that little boy and others. Remember the story in Mark 9?
Yeah. Yeah, when the disciples couldn't cast out.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
That's the one. But Jesus, of course, came to help the little boy with the big demon. You know, I have to say there's something very disturbing.
That sounds like an advertising slogan, maybe for a scary movie. The little boy with the big demon. Lee with a note in New York. Kevin Swanson. Lee says he doesn't know science because that is not true. He does not know Greta's age because math is not true. But he quotes the Bible because that is true. Sure. And I'm sure that he would prefer for his Yahweh Jehovah God to send a bear up over the hill to come down and eat Greta Thunberg like it did for those little children who laughed at Elijah's bald spot or what the hell ever. Obligatory Star Trek reference, courtesy of Lee. Remember the cloud minders? The leadership lived in Stratos. The dumb miners lived on the surface. Ta-da! There we are. And that's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. And we're past the halfway point of the program this evening. If you've got something on your mind that you would like to share or a conversation you would like to engage in, it's easy to reach the program either by Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-574-8178, or the stress line, which works very well these days, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And that'll get you right into the program one way or another. Yeah, there's not too much Kevin Swanson left, but we might as well get all the crazy out there first. All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it.
About the appearance of and the presentation of this Greta Thunberg. So now she's being trotted out in front of the others. The other demonic spirits are using her to lead the world, wherever it's going. I don't know where this world is going, but she is the prophetess that is sharing the wisdom. And Time magazine makes her person of the year, which means that she is the most important, the most significant, the most wise, and the most influential leader of the entire world in 2019, according to Time magazine. Friends, if this isn't a demonstration, a quintessential demonstration of the death of the West, of what an entire empire, what multiple empires look like at the verge of collapsing, this is it, Steve. I mean, it's ridiculous. On the one hand, we want to be compassionate with Greta. I truly believe that Greta needs Jesus, and short of her coming to Christ, I don't know what's going to happen to this young lady. It's sad to watch her. It's a sad to see her in the condition that she is in.
Yeah, you know, this condition she's in, not having had her mind poisoned by a 2,000-year-old hateful, misogynistic belief system. It's sad. Meanwhile, Kevin Swanson would not care if the world burned down around him. Well, he would care if it affected him. But he's another one of those igum-foo Christians, you know, I got mine, fuck you. And so there you are. And it doesn't even exist. It never even occurs to Kevin Swanson to wonder if maybe, what if she's right? Now, he's a Christian, and the Christians are all the time saying, hey, take Pascal's wager. Pascal's wager is, of course, a bullshit thought experiment. Pascal's wager is, hey, maybe Jesus was real, maybe it's all fake. But what harm does it do if I live by the rules promulgated by Christianity? If it turns out to be true, I get to go to heaven and have Frisbees and Wheat Checks for all eternity. And if it's not, I'm still dead, and there was no harm, no foul. But Kevin Swanson can't approach the climate emergency that way. And he can't approach anyone who does not believe exactly as he wants them to believe that way. This is the essence of theocracy. So we have to understand, it's not just the oil companies, the coal companies, the gas companies. They have their capitalist reasons for not caring whether we burn down the planet or not. But it's not just them. It's them in conjunction with their old allies, the religion industry. It's kind of like how, and I'm sure folks like Ron up in the not so frozen north, no, because he's a native West Virginian. If you know your history of the coal industry at all, you know that in the coal camps, the preachers were employed by the coal companies. And so when the preacher ascended to the pulpit every Sunday, he wasn't just preaching the word of God. He was preaching
the word of coal. Remember that Billy Graham got his start as an with support from corporate America to go out and deliver an anti-communist message. Because, you know, remember, there's some of that Jesus stuff in there. It looks pretty Marxist. But Kevin Swanson? Nah, he's just an evil bastard who's obsessed with a little girl, which is kind of icky, especially when you consider the degree to which they all seem to always be obsessed with some child. Oof. So here we are. It's the second day of January, and we're already off and running. I'm so old I can remember when Republicans billed themselves as Law and Order, the Law and Order Party, as if the Democrats were out there just throwing Molotov cocktails and yelling "Workers of the World Unite" and engaging in rampant criminality. It's always nice to have a happy story, and something kind of cool happened in Illinois today, or as they say it down here from time to time, Illinois. Pot, weed, cannabis, Mary Jane became legal today in Illinois. How about that? Over 10,000 felons had their pot busts erased from the books as the law went into effect. Because it'd be kind of stupid to have it be legal and there still be people out there who were busted for doing something that is now legal. So there's some happy people in Illinois. Can't find the story now. But regardless, there were millions of dollars in cannabis sales today on the first day of legal weed in Illinois. And I'm sure it's pissing off the non-libertarian Republicans who are worried about our precious little Christian children out there smoking the marijuanas and having their minds opened. And well, what was the old Bill Hicks bit? And people realize today that reality is subjective, and that. But like I said, Republicans used to say that they were the party of law and order. And yet, no one is really responding with disgust over a tweet that Chlamydia Claudius put out today. A lot of very good people were taken down by a small group of dirty, filthy cops, politicians, government officials, and an investigation that was illegally started and that spied on my campaign.
The witch hunt is sputtering badly, but still going on. Ukraine hoax. If this had happened to a presidential candidate or a president who was a Democrat, everybody involved would long ago be in jail for treason and more, and it would be considered the crime of the century, far bigger and more sinister than Watergate.
Really? Dirty, filthy cops. Why, that sounds almost like he's... It sounds like he'd like to be Robert De Niro in the old, well, back in the, what, the 80s? The Untouchables? You're a bunch of dirty, filthy cops. But among the maggots? Oh, there's the harp. Of course. Among the maggots, though, it's... There, the crickets. Yeah, dirty, filthy cops. Uh-huh. You betcha. All right, it's 15 before... Nope, time check. Don't do the time check, Bob. There are people who listen to this program when it's not live. Let's go over and check in with Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd.
Bob.
What's up?
Hey, I like the cricket sound effect. That is very nice.
You want to hear me again?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like I got a little box of crickets right over here next to me.
I'm serious.
Like I've been down to the bait shop or something.
Yeah, or Chinatown where they had these bamboo cages and they have crickets.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm glad you mentioned about the people getting their records cleared over cannabis in Illinois. That's the bigger deal of the deal to me. I mean, not in a personal sense, but.
Well, and, you know, there's progress being made. For instance, there are some states, I think maybe it's only California so far. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not California. Maybe it's another state. But there's a state where potential employers are not allowed to either A, test for, or B, ask if you use cannabis.
That was my next fucking question. See, right. Okay. So we already know, people have been paying attention, Colorado is funding and pushing forward with tests where they can actively tell, like if you're pulled over driving impaired from cannabis. You know, they can tell, as opposed to some bullshit where you take a test and it's like, oh, it looks like you smoked pot in 1986. You're fired. You know, what the fuck
right.
is that?
Yeah, big difference.
I'm exaggerating slightly, but you understand what I'm saying. You know, because this hair sample thing is fucked up. But, you know, the world did not end. When the cat is out of the bag now. This is bullshit. So the cat is out of the bag. And we can't go back. And, you know, if people don't like cannabis, don't smoke it. Don't eat it. Don't ingest it. And don't judge anybody else. That's all I can say. Because I cannot tell you countless of anecdotal accounts of people using cannabis and not having pains anymore or being able to get off debilitating and community destroying drugs.
Like I said, I've been kind of agnostic about CBD and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my neck got bad enough off that, you know, a friend said, here, try this CBD oil, try this lotion. And I rubbed it on my neck, and 10 minutes later, the pain was gone.
You're kidding me.
No. And so I got me some. And I've used it every day, and my neck, I mean, I've got full range of motion. It doesn't sound like a popcorn popper when I move my neck.
Well,
So apparently I got that, and again, it had a lot number on it and a control number, and it came from, it came from a real lab in California.
That was my next question, right.
Okay. And it wasn't the stuff that you buy, you know, CBD gummies there at the counter of the Rippy Mart.
Yeah. See, I remember when you described your that condition that you had, and you know, you were worried. You know, you were like, I don't know if I can continue to do what I'm doing. But you know, you were really in bad shape. See, that's what I'm saying. This God. Well, if you believe in God, I believe in God. God put that here for a reason. It really, honest to God, I'm honest to God. I have to stop saying that. But, you know, certain things work for certain people. But, you know, there's a whole body of research out of Israel. They were the first ones, I think, to identify the endocannabinoid receptors throughout our body. Just like people are susceptible to opioid addiction because, you know, we have natural receptor sites that mimic opioids. And apparently we have the same thing for cannabis, but my God, you know, the CBD is great. It works. It makes all the sense in the world. I mean,
and again, they say that, I mean, my daughter's told me, and she's out in New Mexico, and it's not a legal state, but it's a medical state. She said mm-hmm. that the THC-based ointments and lotions and creams and stuff like that are next level as far as their ability to relieve pain.
I don't disbelieve that at all. Look, there's a documentary out there. What if cannabis cured cancer?
Yeah, I've seen that. Several years old.
Right, it's not new. You know, the power elite, they don't want us to be free and be pain-free and be, you know, it kind of pisses me off in a way. Because it's just ridiculous, man. If you feel like you're drinking too much, you know, smoke more weed or however you ingest it. You know, whatever. It just seems to work for some people. And some people it doesn't, and they don't get it, and that's fine. You know, don't judge anyone. You know, but we all know that person who cannot drink. It's like, oh, shit, hide the liquor. Here comes such and such. You know. Anyway, how the hell are you?
Yeah, you know, I'm getting along. I'm doing this little project down here, and it's exciting and it's fun, and it's certainly keeping me busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that everyone is very impressed is probably not the right adjective or word, but you know, you're being the best father you can be, and that's important. And I guess that's all I can say about that. That it's just, you know, you never know when things are going to click. You can't give up on people because sometimes things just click and it's like, no. Oh, finally,
right?
You know. If somebody had given up on me, man, who knows where I'd be? You know, so
it's like, you know, doing this little play caused me to reflect and think back on how I came to came to love it so much, the theater, acting, you know, performance based art, and it had to do with the awesome public school teachers that I had, especially in high school. But speech and debate and interpretive and interpretation of literature and all of those things, and they never gave up on me, even though I was a chore and a trial and a righteous pain in the ass. But it you know. And it's the kind of thing that can stay with you all your life. So now I'm in that position that's referred to in an old Monty Python sketch about an actor being interviewed, and he said, "Well, you know, it's like my old director used to say to me, we've got all Reg, we've got all the words. Now all we have to do is get them in the right order." And so that's what we're working on. And the play, let's see, this is Thursday, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the play debuts 2 weeks from tonight.
Holy cow. this time to start getting nervous now.
Well, I mean, I've got all the words. I've just got to get them in the right order. But it's given me an opportunity to go back and study a period of time that I absolutely love. You know, Europe is a very different place before gunpowder. I mean, they're still slaughtering the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a decidedly different place. And Henry II is one of the more interesting of the medieval monarchs. And there's a surprisingly large amount of historical data about his reign. And he really was married to one of the most amazing women of the medieval period, Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't like each other toward the end of things. And he really did imprison his own wife in a tower in England for 10 years because she kept starting civil wars against him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a little more than pitting the neighbors against you.
Yeah, and he, of course, you know, I think he read several languages. He didn't speak English. He spoke French and Latin, because Latin was still a spoken language back then.
Mm-hmm.
But the power dynamics, because this is, you know, the person, the way it all winds up, the person who winds up succeeding him is Richard the Lionheart.
Mm-hmm.
And if Richard the Lionheart could have been bothered to procreate, England would not have been saddled with John. But if England had not been saddled with John, then England probably would not have developed the parliamentary system and form of government that it has, that proved a sort of a template for the rest of the world.
That's what I'm talking about. Parliamentary procedure is a motherfucker. It has held true to the test of time. Parliamentary procedure. They thought that shit out.
And challenging the right of a monarch to be an absolute despot, yeah. And I don't mean despot necessarily in its pejorative sense, but his ability to have his word be law and that's the end of it. Well, that sort of look at it. John was such a bad king that there has never since in merry old England been another King John. People are just not. I mean, the royal house they won't have anything to do with it. They're not going to try to rehabilitate the name. He's just going to be. He was just awful, and we're going to let him be his own brand of awfulness. And there's never going to be another King John.
You know, this is what distresses me a lot about this Brexit thing. Up until now, it would seem the UK, across history, they seem to have learned from their mistakes. In other words, we think we're all liberal and we're the nicest country. That's kind of really not true. Because you look at England, they outlawed slavery before we did. They took in, they gave everyone who they conquered, you know, you had citizenship. You can get over to the UK proper. You're in. You know, we subjugated you, but you're in. You know, and thank God, because they would have had shitty food if they didn't do that. But, you know, when you juxtapose how they operated and where we are, with, you know, Margaret Thatcher, now she was a piece of work, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, conservatives revere her the way they revere her in tandem. With the way they revere old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, I guess she's sort of Mary to his Joseph.
Exactly. They loved each other because they were peas in a pod. You know, and I'll never forget when she let loose on Brixton. You know, that was some fucked up shit. But, you know, but so anyway, when people think about how we're supposed to be so liberal, we're not that liberal at all, really. I mean, we set trends, but And we, you know, they got it right before we did. I mean, that's just my perception. Maybe so I could be persuaded otherwise, but look where we are now. This is ridiculous.
You mean what? Circling the drain as a species?
Yeah, we're not moving forward right now.
No.
We're really not. Oh, right. Okay, so I wanted to bounce this off of you. So, and this is kind of a parlor game, but I've been thinking about this. All right, so most of us believe probably Putin has some compromise on our president.
I think it's hard to argue against it.
It's hard to argue against it. And these folks who you hear, your relatives, your friends, your coworkers, whatever, who say there's no Russian stuff there, that say, you know, just they don't understand geopolitical politics, obviously, because they don't understand that most of the decisions that we're making are in Russia's favor. And I fault the media. And I'm going off on a slight tangent, and I'm coming right back. See, when people say Ukraine, you need to say, you don't need to do anything. It would be nice if people would mention, well, you know, Crimea is really part of the Ukraine, and what this is really about is a warm water submarine port. And I don't trust that motherfucker with no freewheeling port for his submarines. No, that's a bad idea. That's a terrible idea. And that gets lost. I very seldom hear anyone on the for-profit media mention, you know, make that connection. And if I'm off base, you know, please, you know, hit me in the head, drub me. But, you know, in addition to being the breadbasket, as you know, as you said many times, that's the nicest place in Russia, Ukraine. Come on. That's why they had the wrong thing. That's the best place to be. But, okay, so, all right, let's say he doesn't have any compromise on Donald. Let's just say he's using the confidence game on him. See, I could see this happening. Say, Donald, you know, they don't like you. You know, Putin could have set all this shit up in the periphery beforehand. Glad-handed this malleable, weak-minded weirdo and said, you know, he already said he wants to be like Putin. So he said, okay, you want to do things like I do. Okay, they don't like you. This is what you do. You know, do it my way. And he gives him instructions. How the fuck do you think he's going to say, well, I don't believe my intelligence because, you know, Putin told me that wasn't, you know, that wasn't right.
You know, interesting you would bring that up because over at Business Insider, they had an article today about an account in a new book, Trump and His Generals, The Cost of mm-hmm. Chaos, by a guy named Peter Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
And he recounts a story from January 2017 when the orange man baby president threw a tantrum at Michael Flynn. And he threw the tantrum at Michael Flynn because Flynn had neglected to tell him that Putin tried to call him and nobody hooked up Nitwit Nero for the call.
Like he missed a call from some hot woman from overseas.
That's really gross, but yes. So what it boiled down to was Theresa May, since we were talking about the Brits, mm-hmm. Back in May of 2017, Theresa May asked Venerial Vespasian if he'd had any contact with Pooty Poot. And Trump said, no, I haven't. And that's when Michael Flynn leaned in and said, sir, we're arranging the call now. I mean, this was January 27th. It's not May, January 27th. Sir, we're arranging the call now. President Putin called several days ago, but we haven't been able to get it on your calendar yet. And that's when the man baby started screaming,
Are you kidding me? Vladimir Putin tried to call me, and you didn't put him through. What the hell were you thinking?
Well, sir, you know, you have a lot of calls. I don't know why I've suddenly made Flynn into Smithers. But, well, sir, you know, we have a lot of calls coming in, and we're trying to manage who you talk to.
What kind of bullshit is this? How is it possible that Putin calls me and you don't put the call through? I don't know what you guys are doing.
Why is that so plausible?
He's the only man on Earth who can destroy us.
Don't let it happen again.
So us is doing the hard work of me.
He's the only man in the world who can destroy me.
Because, see, China's got nukes. Russia's got nukes. Israel has nukes. There are lots of countries that could, India, Pakistan, North Korea. They've all got nukes. So what does that mean when he says he's the only man on the planet who could destroy us? He's using the royal third. He's using the royal first person plural.
We are not amused.
That sounds like a dead giveaway, doesn't it?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Damn. Woo. Okay, so he's got the goods. Okay. So not only does he have the goods, but that is who he is patterning himself after. He idolizes him. Because he wants what Putin has. He kind of, you know, this whole thing is sordid. All right. So,
you'll like this. Wait a minute. This is cowbell worthy. Lee in New York. Oh my God, Putin is Trump's Russian girlfriend from an internet ad.
hot Russian women want me.
It's Tenderoski.
God almighty.
You see, this is, and even Chuck Grassley, there was an article out there today where Chuck Grassley's like, look, man, you got to stop with this tariff. If this motherfucker keeps up, I'm going to have to plant me some soybeans and get a fucking check.
No. Don't plant the soybeans and get a check for not planting them.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, I purchased seed, and I was about to plow, but apparently this won't go through. I'm applying for my need now. You're right. Hey, as mostly folks live around here in this district, they're like, well, it must be a Republican. Oh, God. So, now, I don't know what is going to become of us. I really don't.
Like I said, we are going to need all the solidarity and unity that we can muster in the coming year. This community is going to be vital to our own well-being.
Mm.
Because we're going to have to be able to gather together and just sort out the nutty from the real. Oh, and by the way, I had a note from, that line from Kevin Swanson about the death of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Robert in Australia said, death of Western civilization. I took some time out over Christmas and New Year's to watch some videos on economics. I found three talks, one each by Richard Wolff, Chris Hedges, and Mark Blythe. You can find them on YouTube. If anything is going to cause the collapse of Western civilization, it's not Greta Thunberg, it's the banking system. I won't try to explain what they said here. I'll just suggest that people go and watch the talks. You may or may not agree with what they say, but it's worth the time to listen.
Richard Wolff is a badass, you know what?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's on point. You know, everyone has their point of view, but he appears to be on point. Richard Wolff does not play around. He breaks things down in an economic sense where you can understand it. So he's at Columbia or NYU, one of those.
No, he's brilliant.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
But see, if the for-profit media references him, you know, far left economist Richard Wolff, and yet they never seem to hang that on, you know, being you know, in favor of like the common sense of making sure everybody can go to the doctor when they're sick. Oh, that's far left. But we have a, but it seems like the multimillionaires of the for-profit media have a hard, much harder time explaining why it's a good thing for us to keep propping up predatory, parasitic insurance executives. I saw a story the other day that says in the rest of the world, a cardiac stent procedure can cost as much as $6,000 or more, $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, 36,000. Now, in the rest of the world, it's not because those procedures are being done by grocery clerks. They're being done by cardiologists and surgeons and, you know, heart doctors. But the difference between that $36,000 and $6,000, that $30,000, is what we have to pay to keep the goddamned insurance executives happy.
Well, you know, Bob, when it comes to the healthcare, this whole myth of this stemming from Manifest Destiny and On Forward, that's how it kind of started to me. This whole notion that we had the best of everything is just nonsense. But, you know, the masses just won't get it until you just drop. I don't know how you have to explain it to them. And it's so complicated now because people are getting their information from so many different sources. But, for instance, when I was in school, there was something called the World Book, and it was put out by, I think the CIA puts it out. But it basically there's a listing of how countries are rated in terms of, you know, who's the most advanced country. And one of the biggest measures is infant mortality. And for some reason, we keep hovering around 36. You know, we're in the 30s in terms of countries with infant mortality. You know, of course, it doesn't include abortion. That would be silly. But in other words, we don't prenatal care. We're not there. We think we have, I mean, we have the capacity. We do have very good hospitals and very good doctors, but it costs very good money. And this is why other you know, even in Central and South America, they have great doctors and hospitals. It's gonna cost shit. And you get your teeth fixed. You can get a whole lot of shit done down there really cheap.
Yeah.
You know, Germany, you know, so we're operating on a myth. A myth, but people just don't want to accept that. But I think, I don't know, maybe we have to bottom out before people complain. I had a woman come into a store today. I was in a convenience store, and I'm telling you, she came in and there was some sign on the door about a ban on, I don't know, it was only selling cigarettes to 21-year-old people. I don't know if they put that up in your convenience stores around there.
Yeah, they have.
Okay. So, and she just blurted out, oh, I can't wait till we get rid of this president. And I turned around and said, wow. I mean, I didn't say it out loud. I just, you know, glanced. But, you know, the fix is in still. I'm still worried about the fix. That's the problem, is the fix. This gerrymandering, the electoral college, and the fact that Republicans will not fund to make sure that our elections are clean and not influenced. And that's the dead giveaway. You know, when everybody's telling you that the dealer is crooked in the card game, and you're like, no, I know Jerry. Jerry's okay. Or I know, you know, Wanda. Wanda's cool. That's the bartender. That's, you know, down where we go. No, she's right. Fine. No, it's a high-stakes poker game. You can't go with Wanda. No, Wanda deals money all the time. She's good. Okay. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So I just hope this shit ends nicely, and I really hope people pay attention to the nice way of you telling people. You're not telling folks how to vote, but look, we had to vote from a posture of defense. It doesn't matter. We're not going to get what we want right now, but we got to just get this shit out, get this pathogen out. It's got to go. You know, we got to rid our body politic of this cancer.
Oh, and by the way, as to the Illinois weed story,
mm-hmm.
Our buddy Andy the Angry Jew just wrote in. That's his name. That's his nickname. He's Andy the Angry Jew. Subject line, weed. Bob, there's almost a 30 to 35% tax on recreational weed in Illinois. Leave it to Illinois to screw it up.
The legal weed is way too expensive. It's way too expensive. That's the next
hurdle. Well, there's a risk that, there's a risk that that creates an ongoing market for the black market stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? After all these years to have legal weed, if you want to tax it at 50%, I'm groovy with that too. Maybe maybe use all that revenue to fund a statewide single payer healthcare system.
Now that sounds like a winner.
Crazy,
now,
huh?
No, that sounds beautiful. 2% off the top goes to the national healthcare system.
I mean, I mean, we pay federal gasoline tax to maintain the highways, and there's an extra federal tax on cigarettes to pay for SCHIP, you know, the expanded children's health insurance program. Why not? Well, it's good. It's good to hear from you. I was thinking of you earlier today and wondering if I would, because it's been a while since we talked. I imagine the weather's similar there to what I've got here. It was nice to be able to. I don't have my grills or griddles or anything with me, but it was nice to be able to do a little bit of cooking yesterday. And boy, did that corned beef turn out good.
Oh, okay. That's beautiful. You had corned beef and cabbage?
Oh yeah. And I took it to the theater last night, and the guy who's directing loaded up his plate and said, "My God, this is the best corned beef I've ever eaten in my life."
Mm.
How did you do this? And I said, "There's one trick. Don't boil it. Roast it. Low and slow. Never higher than 250 degrees." Let it go for 4 hours, and just the brining liquid that comes with it, and the little spice pack and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, you put your cabbage around it and let the cabbage steam inside and be steamed by the juices. Now he was tickled. He was impressed.
Well, you know how to do it, man. That sounds great, and that's something that's quite
and
so popular.
The Hoppin' John on day two was fantastic.
Oh, yes.
It only gets better as you go. You know, the sautéed onions and celery, and I know Tracy was making gumbo yesterday, and that set my taste buds to singing. But there's not a real good restaurant around here that sells gumbo. So great barbecue, great fried fish.
Mm-hmm.
Some other good stuff too, but no good gumbo.
Well, you know the gumbo pot, you just keep adding to it. You know, people come by, you add a little more to it, cook something on the side, dump it in there.
Soft shell crabs.
Oh man.
Shrimp, scallops.
Good.
Mild
fish.
Well,
yeah, I'm glad that you're around still, and it's a new year, and you'll be getting some new subscribers, and you know, people are listening and people are paying attention. Because it's the truth, people. If you listen to the archives of this show, of this program, of this informational notable point, this data point in time, you know, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. Well, this weather's crazy, and I guess you don't miss Frontier too much right now.
No, I got a bad AT&T story in the stack about the fact that they took advantage of all those Trump tax cuts and now they're laying off people left and right. And, you know, bupkis, crickets. Wait, crickets? Yeah, crickets. But the fact of the matter is, they have actually deployed fiber optic all the way to the pole gigabit service in parts of this town. Gigabit up,
what?
Gigabit down. AT&T has. Now, I don't have that, but I got 50 down and 10 up, and it's like the racetrack speeds compared to back home.
It sounds like it. You can tell.
I think the sound quality is better. I think the overall all of that is better, and that's why I'm trying to figure out if maybe we move down here at least part time.
Well, I will say this about AT&T. You have to stay on that. They're going to shit you as long as you let them shit you. But if you let them know that I'm watching you, AT&T, and you're not living up, they'll straighten out.
So far they've been nothing but a pleasure.
Well, check the bills is all I'm saying, because they're funny with the bills.
Yeah, I certainly, of course, I'm not using their cell service. This is just their internet service.
Mm-hmm.
But if things had been slightly different, I would have had 100. I would have had 100 down and 20 up for the same.
Damn.
Yeah. They're deadly in earnest in trying to capture a big chunk of the market here. But I got to get out of here, Todd, because I'm going to have to roll out of here in a few minutes. Head downtown.
Oh, right. And you are truly a Renaissance man. Look how long we've been doing plays as bipeds. You know, and there's something to that, man. I bet you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you come home some nights and just cry. Just because, you know, when you go through those ranges of emotion, it's a good thing.
I'm tired when I get home. I am tired when I get home.
Well, keep eating well, and I'm glad I was able to contact you, and peace and love to everybody, and I don't want to start calling out names because I can't. And, the pros, Lori, you know who you are, and hey, man, we have to keep on keeping on.
Indeed, indeed. Todd, you have yourself a good evening. Let's talk soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Later now. Bye.
All right.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan, and out to Talibandiana, where Dave awaits.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Happy New Year officially.
Indeed, indeed. And to you as well.
Okay. I'm hopping up and down in a wheelchair in the blind right now. Christine got a notice from the state of Indiana. The feds are taxing her state income tax refund to pay for Trump's goddamn tax relief for the rich.
Yeah, we knew this was coming.
Well, I mean, her refund was, get this, we might join you in Alabama with the $136 she received last year. But she's like, I'm only filing an EZ from now on. I'm not taking any more deductions. And I'm thinking you're screwing yourself out of more than what they would be taking. And she's like, well, you don't know that. I'm like, I can do math. But, when you were talking last night about doing The Lion in Winter, I went on YouTube and looked it up and found a broadcast on a channel that had it dubbed, it subtitled in Arabic, but the audio was still in English. So it's kind of unusual watching that, because normally I try to look at subtitles, but
yeah, subtitled for Prince Bonesaw.
I don't read Arabic, so yeah, well, I guess, but it was the character of John reminded me more and more of Trump because he kept pouting, he kept throwing temper tantrums, and at one point was referred to as a walking pustule. And I thought, whoever wrote this, the goddess of irony must be holding them in their hands.
Oh, no, it is full of, the language is just delightful all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the great plays. I remember reading a book.
Well, I think at some point, I was talking with the director last night. I was thinking at some point, maybe I'll have the cast over and set up a bunch of microphones, and we'll do just a little taste, a few cuttings here and there.
Oh, that would be nice.
Just to let people hear what it sounds like.
That would be absolutely beautiful.
And then I'm going to try to get some sort of, I mean, it won't be high quality, but some kind of decent quality video for
that
later.
That would be good, because I was thinking about it, and I watched it after you were talking about doing the play, and I was like, I haven't seen that play in a while, so I took another look at it. And it was the writing still holds up all these years later. I mean, it really does. But what I was saying is, I read a book about Eleanor's imprisonment in Salisbury, and you know, as Mel Brooks, the great prophet, once said, "It's good to be the king." And in Henry's case, he needed to, you know.
Yeah.
It worked out for him. I guess it beat having her go through a second annulment.
Well, you've got to work through the whole script before you see it. And I don't want to give anything away, but it's got more twists and turns than the road up my mountain going home.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the way that court worked.
Well, there were a lot of the things that we take for granted about European royal houses had not developed yet. For instance, just because you're the firstborn, well, there's no primogeniture yet, and so the sons of kings often fought each other for the right, and of course, you know, Henry fought to become the heir of Stephen. He wasn't Stephen's son. He was Geoffrey of Anjou's son, who wore a blossom from the French Norman broom sage plant, and that was the Plantagenet. But anyway, I got to roll out of here, Dave. It's good talking to you, my friend. Stay warm there in the blind, will you?
All right, Bob. And break a leg if I don't talk to you beforehand.
All right. You take care now. Later.
All right. Bye.
Our buddy Dave from Taliban, Indiana. And yeah, I'm going to knock off a half an hour early because we're running the whole act, and that may happen a couple of times, but you know, the program will be here every evening, but it may get shortened here and there. But thanks everybody for jumping in. Thanks to Charlene and an anonymous individual and Irwin for answering Chris's challenge. We've got 150 to go for tomorrow. If anybody wants to jump in on an a la carte basis to take that down from the overnight crew, that would be cool. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you so very much to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great evening, everybody. A great day. Later.